the Premier League on OTB.
Rashford pings it into Cavani! Edison Cavani wins it!
Exclusive Premier League live commentaries every Sunday. The very best expert analysis on your phone and for free. Download the OTB Sports app now.
The Football Show on Off The Ball.
With Paddy Power. The best partnership since Vidic and Ferdinand.
Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
I'm prepared for anything I can.
Well, do it then.
Do
it then. What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Yeah, you're welcome along to the Football Show. Philippe Auclair is coming up a little bit later on. I spoke to Philippe earlier. He is very exercised over the scenes in Nice. The game abandoned, obviously, against Marseille. Extraordinary kind of 15 minutes. And then the rather strange side of Nice coming back out to wait for a corner to be taken by a Marseille player. And obviously Marseille hadn't bothered coming back out for obvious reasons. So they were given the game. But the fallout's been, as you can imagine, noisy. So Philippe is going to talk to us about what happened at the weekend. And the general, it seems, culture of things being thrown at players in French football. We see more of it there than we do, for instance, in the Premier League. So Philippe Auclair is on the way. Happy to say Dan McDonald of the Irish Times. Oh my goodness me, Dan McDonald of the Irish Independent. Oh my God.
Joe.
That's unforgivable. Joe, that's unforgivable.
They're back on now and everything, you know, and that's it. It's just in your mind.
In my defense, I had the Irish Times open in front of me here on the website.
Well, as you would, yeah.
Well, no, I've several news outlets open. I'm in your black book now, haven't I? I'm done.
No, honestly, I mean, life's too short for this, Joe. I mean, before the pandemic, obviously, I mean, this would have been a source of horror. But really, I mean, we can get over these things now, right? I mean, it's really good to talk to Nathan on a Tuesday night.
Listen, I deserve that and plenty more besides. Apologies. How many times have I introduced you? I've never done that.
No.
Unless there's anything you want to tell people.
No. Listen, I hear you're off on holidays next week, Joe. Is that gardening leave or holidays? Or is anything?
No. That's holidays.
It's a holiday, yeah.
Excuse me. Dan McDonald of the Irish Independent. Goodness
off
me.
To the beach, aren't you? Off to the beach. Is that what you're after? Yeah. International break. That's a great way to live, yeah.
Well,
what a pro.
I do want to talk to you about International Week, which I admit I am away for. that is a coincidence, by the way. But Fabrizio Romano on Twitter has just tweeted down, and he's a man of considerable heft, some 4 million followers, so a journalist over in Italy. He's just tweeted, confirmed, Real Madrid have made a formal bid of €160 million to sign Kylian Mbappe immediately. He says no green light from PSG yet. Mbappe's turned down more than 3 different proposals from PSG to extend the contract. He's waiting too. And that's the end of the tweet. So, I mean, I had been reading, I'm sure you had too, the speculation around Mbappe and Madrid, but the fact that Madrid are €900 million in debt had led me to think, well, maybe they won't go and torch another 160 or whatever it would take to get Mbappe, but it's confirmed they seem to have made a formal bid of 160 million. Mbappe, as we know, is out of contract at the end of next summer. I mean, even PSG, with all that money, they can't let Mbappe go on a free, can they, surely, just to keep him around for one more year?
Yeah, it's a mad story, actually. And you did send it to me before we came on. And I've sort of been in, you know, you're in your own zone and you're sort of not following everything. And my initial thought was, hang on, are Madrid not meant to be broke here? Or like, what's going on? Like they wouldn't get a mortgage, probably, but they could get like one of the best young players in the world. I mean, that just goes to show the football is drunk. It's insane, really. You know, but then I read that when I was just reading that apparently they've actually been trying to put together an Mbappe fund, like a bit like people trying to cobble together money for a deposit or like whatever, do whatever they can to get their money in from whatever. So I think selling Odegaard to Arsenal was a part of it, and possibly Varane, and then also the saving on Ramos's wages. So like, they're getting everything together that they can here. You know, they're going into the change jar. They're doing everything they can find to like, what can we do to get Mbappe? And whatever happened to that Odegaard guy? He was good at what can we get for him? You know, and they are putting it together. And I mean, as you said, that's a sort of that's a very reliable source for the sense that this has happened.
Yeah.
Did PSG have any? I mean, do they care about balancing the books, really? I mean, clearly they don't in any sense, but it isn't one of the great things about the European Super League fallout that, you know, the reformist European Clubs Association, you know, needed a voice for equality and you know, distribution of wealth and a spokesperson for their club, and the PSG guy has gone in charge of that there. So maybe they just can't afford to be seen to let someone go for free, as you say, and this is what they need to do, you know. I mean, I suppose if Mbappe wants to go, and that some of the reports seem to suggest that he's, you know, he's up for the idea, and it's 160 million. I mean, it covers you in some description if things don't go to plan this year. But as I said, I don't know, PSG are such a mad club. I'm not sure there are any normal rules applied to them. And maybe there's some penny pincher in the office there saying maybe we need to do this. I mean, they never really get punished for anything, do they? So they can have a sponsorship deal or something to cut, you know, whatever financial fair play was. They seem to have got around that.
Yeah, well, that's the breaking news this evening. So that's extraordinary development. And then there's speculation that if he was to go, that then PSG would swoop in for Ronaldo, and suddenly this kind of just you know, narrative dream would be unleashed.
This is just what pandemic, you know. I mean, this is, but it, I mean, it is a sort of absurd. I saw some figures the other day. There's this it's a sort of a podcast in the UK that sort of looks at the finances of the game over there. And I think it was showing all the clubs in League Two and League One. Their losses over the last 18 months. I think there was one club had recorded anything at a profit, and the rest were racking up losses in the millions. And look, that's the fourth tier of English football. And you step it up the charts, you know, into the Championship losses can be insane. And as you say, like, Real Madrid can be whatever, 900 million or whatever the figure was you said there in debt. Mm. And yet you can finance these deals. Now, people will say, well, what will you generate? I mean, Mbappe's like an investment, right? I mean, it's like, you know, it's like taking a gamble. What could he generate in sales of merchandise and notwithstanding the football merit of his signing, you know, commercially, what can he do for you in a short space of time? You can structure the deal to pay it over a number of years. So, of course, I mean, it is basically like it's all leveraged against you know, sort of, and that's how the game works. That's how it's propped up. I mean, you think it's going to blow at some stage, but it doesn't really. You know, you'll have one or two or three clubs that go by the wayside, and the madness continues because you're a big enough brand to survive. That's what they do.
Some other news just confirmed this evening then. Premier League clubs, and it does seem to be just Premier League clubs, will not release players for international matches played in the coming weeks in countries on the UK government's red list. So Premier League released a statement. They said the decision was one they were taking reluctantly, but unanimously, I'll bet. Definitely unanimous, whatever bit reluctant. And this is going to apply to nearly 60 players from 19 clubs who were due to travel to 26 different red list countries. UK red list is obviously up on their website. I was having a look at this, and it's generally African countries, generally South American countries. I mean, Georgia were on the list. I was looking for European countries. Georgia were on the list. I mean, we seem to play Georgia, what feels like, Dan, eight times
Georgia
a year. Yeah.
Particularly in September. I mean, it's September. There's nothing like September. The schools come back and Ireland play Georgia. Yeah. I mean, this is part of the routine.
And it's 1-0. No, I know. So the statement added that, you know, the big issue is that FIFA's current position not to extend its temporary release exemption for players is kind of the big issue. Players who are required to quarantine. So there's no exemption for those players. And essentially now, if any Premier League player was to play in one of these red list countries, they would have to come back and, amongst other things, have to do 10 days of hotel quarantine. And so they'd miss at least two Premier League games, maybe a Carabao Cup game as well. And the Premier League clubs just said, look, this isn't viable for you know, that reason and other reasons. And this could have been, I mean, if Ireland, so I presume if Ireland were away to Georgia on the red list, then Seamus Coleman, Shane Duffy, Daryl Shea, on you go. Or sorry, not Daryl Shea, he's back in the Championship now.
We do have a short Premier League list. Like,
but maybe it wouldn't be devastating.
Quinn Gallagher, I suppose.
Yeah, or even last season, you lose all the the Sheffield United players, West Brom players as well. So, okay, it wouldn't be devastating for Ireland, but it could easily have been quite damaging. I mean, we wouldn't want to lose even our few Premier League players that we have. So it seems like Ireland against Azerbaijan and obviously away to Portugal will be just fine. But that's going to cause ructions over the coming days, I think.
Yeah, no, I was looking at Azerbaijan is on the amber list now. Yeah, I think it might have been on the Irish red list very recently. So, I mean, these things are obviously updated all the time. And I think there was attempts by the Premier League clubs to maybe lobby government to avoid quarantine rules for some of these players. And I mean, clearly they're not getting anywhere with that. I mean, they were able to completely forget these quarantine and rules or whatever when they were getting UEFA big, when the government and Boris Johnson and co were getting all the UEFA bigwigs in for the Euro semi-final and final, and they didn't have to go through any quarantine process. And but they've obviously found it harder in this instance. Because, you know, this is obviously something that's not going away. And as a result, you probably need to try and set down some kind of approach and stance to it that people can plan ahead for October, November. But you're right, it does create the situation where if for some reason a country that you may not expect to be on the red list, but suddenly, you know, hits a high level of cases, thus going on the red list, it becomes an issue. I mean, you just feel, though, like it's you know, it is convenient that in many cases you're talking about, you know, going to African countries, and there's a variety of reasons for that. I mean, if a country England were playing a qualifier in was suddenly on the red list, if England were going to Georgia, can you really see this becoming a, you know, not finding some kind of way around it? Mm. You know, so yeah, I mean, sometimes the pandemic, you know, brings, we've seen, like, it brings matters to a head. You know, there's almost a convenience, as I say, that it brings certain subjects to the head. You always feel over the years there's been a brewing war about players going away on international duty, particularly to some far-flung places, you know, particularly topical in an African Cup of Nations year this year, which is going to be the case in January. And that maybe, like, this is a part of the small bit of a tug of war here, that once you stop letting players go to a couple of games for your country, it doesn't become such a thing in future to try and stop them, as much as FIFA rules say you have to release them for a competitive game.
Yeah.
But obviously, there's always that issue when a player gets injured. They've had to change it in recent years. If a player gets injured in international duty, you know, the association has to cover wages, say, and there's little sort of attempts by the big clubs to get a little bit back for what they consider to be a nonsense, that these important employees that generate millions and millions for them just disappear off your radar and you have no control over it. And I suppose this is an example where they probably have the right on their side. But where does it go from here?
Sorry, you know? Did I understand that right? So if Gareth Bale got injured on Welsh international duty and he was out for 2 weeks, are you telling me the Welsh FA have to stump up his 1.2 million over for the 2 weeks?
I think that was an issue with the... I think there's actually a compensation fund or something that goes into it rather than the association itself. Sorry. Right. But I think when Seamus Coleman got his injury in international duty, I think there was a compensation that was it FIFA or UEFA? I've actually just thrown that out there now without having it 100%. But it's definitely not the case that there is a case that the clubs have to, the clubs have got a situation where they're covered on that now.
Wow.
So,
look, if, for instance, Portugal was suddenly on the red list, Dan, then obviously Ireland would be without Shane Duffy. And that is not an option anymore. Shane Duffy is back. The rejuvenation is complete. He's loving life again. He's scoring goals. He's back where he belongs. So this day next week, we're on the eve of the game, are we? Tomorrow week,
yeah,
it's Ireland-Portugal. Okay.
Tomorrow week, eve of the game. I will clarify, yeah, FIFA paid Seamus Coleman's wages when he was out with his broken leg. Sustaining international duty. So there you go.
Grant. Because, I mean, we didn't quite have the cash. Sorry there, Everton.
Of the time, it was 2018. There would have been some deal done of some description. Yeah, someone would have been paying for those wages and getting back.
But anyway, Sports Director are going to pay his wages and then they'll sponsor us for the next 30 years. So, Shane Duffy, this day week, Portugal, I mean, Irish
Even
fever. This is a big game. Yeah, as is the way these things kind of creep up on you. You talk about them for ages and then suddenly they're only a few days away. So you're going to be over at this game, actually. First time in a while.
Yeah. First time out of the country since all of this happened, all right. And going back to an Ireland away game. which is again something you used to do regularly, and we've been watching them all. I say we, as in, you know, even people reporting on them have been watching them all on TV since this happened. So yeah, fans aren't able to go still, although I suspect there'll be a lot of Ireland fans on holidays in the region, or because it's in the Algarve. Portugal moved these games from Lisbon to the Algarve to try and give the tourist area a bit of a leg up, you know, right, after the pandemic and all of that. And I'm guessing they were assuming there would be tourists from, you know, other jurisdictions, including Ireland, visiting. So I still suspect we'll see some Irish voices or hear some Irish voices at the game. But it's right upon us. Yes, Stephen Kenny names a squad on Thursday. We've touched upon it there, like the dearth of Irish players in the Premier League at the moment. I mean, the first couple of weekends, it has really just been Seamus Coleman, Shane Duffy and Kieran Clarke the first week that have started games, one or two others off the bench. So we are looking to the Championship and even to League One for form, you know, for players that are form. And there are a couple, to be fair, but it's a big ask, obviously, going away to Portugal, where you can watch Jota and Bruno Fernandes and, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo, albeit he's in a bit of a standoff at the moment, and many more.
It might actually suit us if Portugal did go on the red list. Like, we'll trade you Coleman and Duffy for all your Premier League lads.
Yeah, that's the cynical take. If only there was an administrator there that could posit that idea. But anyway, it's good. Like, Renato Sanchez is, like, that's the thing. Like, Renato Sanchez was a really big player for Portugal in the Euro. Stephen Kenny actually was sort of waxing lyrical about him and how good he was. He actually kept Bruno Fernandes out of the team for the game they got knocked out in. But then this is the whole thing. Renato Sanchez was ruled out with injury, and it's like, that's a blow. Well, I mean, is it a blow? I mean, Bruno Fernandes comes into the side. Can you really describe it as a blow? I mean, it's a minor irritant.
Well, I haven't talked too much about Duffy over the last couple of days. Obviously, lots going on the football show to cover. So what's he been saying about his rejuvenation? Just seems happier for a start. It was a rotten year, it seemed, from in Glasgow. There was the untimely passing of his father as well, and you're alone in a city and lockdown, and everything just kind of conspired against him.
Yeah, I have to admit, I didn't see this sort of rejuvenation coming in a Brighton sense. You know, I certainly thought Shane Duffy would make a return somewhere, and that Celtic would be a bit of an aberration. But you did sort of feel that it was done for him at Brighton. And what seems to be coming out from Graham Potter and from Duffy himself is that he really did. And okay, this is the type of thing that people say, but it does sound like it's had a genuine impact that we can see tangibly in that his involvement in games, that he did have a sort of a bit of a reckoning with himself in the summer and sort of realised, well, I need to change some things. He's been vague about what that was, but there's been references to lifestyle changes, so I'm not sure what that, you know, what that necessarily means. But he clearly felt that he needed to approach things in a different way. It was a tough time for him at Celtic. He was away from home, you know, as you mentioned, his dad passed away. He's in a city which, you know, is a great city, but you're moving there during the lockdown, and you maybe don't know too many people, and it's not the life you maybe imagined, you know, joining Celtic. And just everything went badly wrong. And it's interesting, Stephen Kenny brought him away for that international break in June and got him that game against Hungary. And I'd say that even might even have sent him off on a bit of a high into the summer, as much as would be possible. And it seems like he's just come back in pre-season in great nick. There was luck involved with this. He wasn't due to play the opening game, and there was a COVID issue affected one of the other players. And he seems that his attitude had got him back into the squad, but it was that circumstances that had got him into the game. But he's played really well in the two matches. And all of a sudden, maybe after the first week, you're thinking, yeah, they might want him in the shop window here, and he'll go before the window closes. Whereas now, it seems like on form, it would be mad to let him go. So it's a great story for him. And he's also playing in the back three, which a question mark around Duffy would have been, you know, back three in a Graham Potter side. Would he be able to sort of play it distribution and possession-wise, which is obviously a question that's been raised about his stance with Ireland too. Mm-hmm. But it seems like he's done these things to a high level with Brighton. And, you know, maybe there's at whatever age, he's born in 92, he's 30 in January, but it seems like maybe whatever changes he's made can help to bring about even some kind of improvement in him, which is a mad thing to be saying, really, because we sort of thought we knew everything we needed to know about Shane Duffy at this stage.
Yeah, no, it's good. So I know you were watching West Ham 4, Leicester 1 last night. I mean, the David Moyes redemption story is, I think, pretty much complete now, Dan. And then Mikel Antonio stole everyone's hearts last night. So he's moved one past Paulo Di Canio as West Ham's all-time Premier League goal scorer. 48 goals. Look, he's still close to 235 behind the all-time West Ham scorer, but he's the Premier League top scorer. And boy, were Sky going to make a big deal out of this, because it's the Premier League and we need something here. And he did it, so he was one behind Di Canio, moved one clear. He's on 48. To be fair, though, what kind of elevated this beyond just hype was Antonio himself, who was just so utterly happy and charming afterwards, and kind of was behaving like you think somebody who's getting paid millions a year to play Premier League football probably should behave a bit more, you know, like, God, this is fun, you know. And so he celebrated. It was pre-planned. He had the cardboard cut out of himself.
I mean, listen, you need to have a good personality to get away with that.
No,
this
do.
Is the thing. Can you imagine, like,
it wouldn't be for me or you.
I can imagine if Ronaldo did that, though, in a charmless way. If Ronaldo produced a cardboard, sure, like got a cardboard cutout put in the crowd and produced it and celebrated with it, I mean, people wouldn't find it funny. Like, well, they might find it funny, but it's the fact that he came out and he put such a great spin on it. Everyone's like, well, I mean, of course, I mean, he's entitled to do it.
Yeah,
you know?
He's 31 years of age. I mean, started out like at fullback and winger, has now blossomed into wearing the number 9 jersey as opposed to the number 30 jersey, and has scored 48 goals. And so he does his interview afterwards in Monday Night Football with Carragher, Neville and Dave Jones, who are back in studio, and they kind of clock really early on that, oh my God, this isn't drudgery. Like, we can actually have a bit of fun here, and they really enjoyed it as well. So here's a little sample if you didn't catch Mikel Antonio. He was on Monday Night Football afterwards, and like I said, he got this cardboard cutout of himself to celebrate with when he scored. So needless to say, the lads in the studio had some questions over the celebration. Have a listen.
The celebration was arguably even more special, but we want to know, Mikael, how much this was planned, the planted cardboard cutout that we spotted. Have a look on your monitor. That's before the match, the organisation that went into this. And then it was sealed with a kiss. Lovely. So whose idea was that?
So basically, obviously, I was like, I've got to do a record. Obviously, I've not been celebrating it of late because of VAR. But I was like, you know what, I'm making history. I was like, I've got to make it, do it special, innit? I started off doing celebrations, so I've got to finish it with celebrations. Did any of you get what celebration it was, by the way?
What I asked.
Go on then,
come on. Fill us in.
I want you to guess. What do you think it is?
You haven't had a kiss for a while?
Save the Last Dance. You know, remember the lift from the end, Save the Last Dance.
Oh, we haven't watched that one recently. Can you imagine, Mikael, had that been disallowed through VAR, having gone through all that?
I know, right? That would have been proper embarrassing. But you know what? It's also one of those things where it's amazing. I love and enjoy it all the day. You always see me smiling, so I probably will see the funny side of it as well.
It's not just West Ham who are top of the table. Mikel Antonio is top of the table goal scoring. Can you stay there?
Obviously. And I'm going to make it. I'm going to put a big distance between us so no one can catch me. That's what I'm going to do.
Mikel, last time we saw you on Friday Night Football, you gave us a little dance. Can we have one tonight or not?
I know what I'll do. Can someone get my cardboard cut out for me?
Yeah.
I'll bring that on with me.
That's what we love.
Anybody? No one's getting it. No one wants to see it.
So suddenly we're all huge Mikel Antonio fans. Amazing.
Yeah, and he's just come across really well. Like, really sort of really natural, you know? I mean, can definitely... I can see you doing some corporate work with him in the future, Joe.
Well, look, you know, he saved my fantasy Premier League team this week as well, Dan. So,
well, I mean,
extra
he's got a lot going for him. But it's a great story that, I mean, like, he's, as you say, like, in his earlier career, like, he was sort of almost viewed as sort of a flighty winger. You know, you're thinking, yeah, and now he's a number 9 at Premier League level. And it's sort of, you'd like to almost maybe hear more about that sort of evolution, maybe, and I'm sure he's probably done stuff about it, but how he's actually managed to adapt. Does it say anything about what you need to be a number nine in the Premier League now, and the sort of attributes that you need, that he's managed to, like, it's an unusual sort of arc, you know? Like, sometimes you have strikers who go out to the wing rather than maybe the other way around, if you know what I mean. So,
Clock is against us massively here already, as I knew it would be. So we were going to talk some Premier League action from the weekend. I might just skip by that because we're going to do that again on the football show tomorrow. Three things to try and touch on. You can pick the order. We should mention Shamrock Rovers in action this week with a two-goal deficit against Flora Tallinn. That's in front of 3,500 at Tallaght Stadium. Secondly, it seems Jack Byrne is going to be leaving Cyprus. And thirdly, you're telling me there's some hotshot kids on the Brighton bench this evening that we should mention.
They've just come on. I mean, Evan Ferguson has just come on in the last minute for Brighton. He's 16. They're 2-0 up away to Cardiff. Now, Andrew Moran come on previously. Andrew Moran is 17. And there's another, James Furlong, ex-Shamrock Rovers, is on the bench tonight, but he's a defender, so maybe less likely to get brought on. Evan Ferguson is a 16-year-old striker we're going to be talking a lot about, I think, in the coming years, as much as you try and balance hype. Some people may remember his name because he was 14 when he played for Bowes against Chelsea in that friendly at Dalymount Park. And it was maybe some people were critical of that at the time. And he actually came on against Chelsea, a decent Chelsea side, and nearly scored. Would have played with, come through Kevin's to Bowes, would have been at Bowes last year till he left for Brighton. Was actually only able to leave, I think, for Brighton with his age because he has an English mother, whereas the Brexit situation has made things complicated for young lads. But, I mean, Evan Ferguson is a 16-year-old striker who's gone straight into the under-23s. He's been scoring goals and he's coming off the bench now for a senior debut for a Premier League club, albeit in the Cup. And we'll come back to him again, but one thing about Evan Ferguson is a lot of people in football will tell you he's a great player, but they'll have a vested interest in them in some shape or form. But I find with Evan Ferguson is people who have no stake in the game will tell you, no, this kid has got an amazing chance. And I wouldn't rule out Andrew Moore and the other guy too, who's a bit of a Wes Houlihan style. Jack Byrne, it hasn't worked out in Cyprus. We'll see what happens with his future before the window closes there next week. But America in 2022 is probably more likely for him. One of his old Man City coaches is over there. And the Shamrock Rovers one, they've left themselves on a mountain to climb, unfortunately. But it's not insurmountable, but they're two goals down against Flora Tallinn. So they need probably close to a flawless performance on Thursday, whereas with 3-2, they had a margin for error. They've sort of been the architects of their own downfall, really. And hopefully that crowd you mentioned, they can create an atmosphere and turn it round, because to have an Irish team in the group stages will be great. And they have a great chance, but they've made it hard for themselves. Because they were Jack Byrne, actually.
Just going to say, so Jack Byrne, like, he's been linked with a move to the US, as you've said, and he joined Apoel, was it the day before Mick McCarthy got the sack, effectively? Yeah. So he's had his 9 months there and it hasn't gone terribly well. And I know he's had a back injury as well. I presume Rovers would have been interested in getting him back. Is it just Jack Byrne kind of seeking out a US move, or what's the story here?
Yeah, I know. Well, it's not possible for Rovers to bring him back in the short term because he's not a free agent at the moment, and he would have had to have been a free agent last month. I think in more time, I mean, Apoel have basically hit some financial difficulties, and I don't think his time over there has been very straightforward in that regard. I think more will be heard about that in due course. The Mick McCarthy thing you mentioned, they didn't qualify for Europe. And to be fair, some people did warn at the time that, you know, football in Cyprus can be volatile. And if Apoel didn't go well that season, things could get a bit tricky there. And they've probably been proven to be correct, to be fair. I think the Charlotte option is a good one. But I think Jack, you know, if you have him on, like, he'd be honest enough, he'd probably know himself. At his age, like, he's what, 25 now? It's a big year to lose, you know, and he's lost, you know, he had great momentum after Shamrock Rovers. Like, he was in the Ireland squad playing in competitive games. So, I mean, people would have said he needed the Apoel move to go right. He definitely needs the next big one to go right. The issue is, can he get something short term between now and January to bridge him? But financially, that could be difficult, but it could be something like League One. But it's complicated. It's not going to be straightforward looking that out.
Okay. Dan McDonald of the Irish Independent, of course. Thanks so much. And we'll talk. I think you're in the newsroom tomorrow, so we'll talk tomorrow.
All right. Talk, Joe.
Thanks very much. That's Dan McDonald there of the Irish Independent. We'll take a short ad break. As I said, we spoke to Philippe Auclair earlier on. This evening, really interesting in what happened in Nice over the weekend. So Philippe Auclair on the way next.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, where the football chat flows like Jack Grealish's hair.
Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Now you're very welcome back. So there were genuinely extraordinary scenes in League One at the weekend. To tell us more and to tell us about the fallout, which is continuing, very happy to say Philippe Auclair is on the line. Hi, Philippe.
Good evening to you. I hope I can help you. I'm struggling.
It's funny, you know, I was watching Malice at the Palace, which dropped on Netflix over the last couple of days. I think lots of people are making their way towards it, where NBA players were involved with the crowd in a good old ding-dong. And Nice against Marseille, which was abandoned in Nice, isn't a million miles off what we saw in the Palace all those years ago. So maybe just for people who haven't seen this, I suspect most people have, but you might just describe how this all kicked off. Dimitri Payet got things really moving.
Well, I think it's rather the Nice supporters who got things moving by throwing a number of objects at Dimitri Payet, including a full water bottle which hit him straight in the back. It must have hurt a lot, actually. And Payet reacted furiously and lobbed back the projectiles. I mean, there were many others, you know, being thrown. It was on a corner kick. Many others thrown at Marseille players by the so-called ultras of that particular stand at the Allianz Arena in Nice. And it degenerated pretty badly, as in Payet actually kicked the ball absolutely magnificently, an incredible shot into the stands. But some of the supporters, so-called supporters, went onto the pitch. The stewards had to intervene, and to be honest, to them, they did as well as they possibly could at the time. There were some heated exchanges between the Marseille and the Nice players. Three Marseille players were injured or bore the marks of injury, even though this is something which is put in doubt by some people in Nice, absolutely typical for this kind of thing. But it's just absolutely scandalous and it's shocking, and I have to say really, really dispiriting, given the way that the season had started. And the season had started really well in France. It had been a superb start to the Ligue 1, and this suddenly happens. It's not the first time there have been incidents in this particular fixture, because obviously Marseille and Nice, even though they're not as close to each other as you might think, it's some kind of a local derby. Mm. There are two big clubs, historically speaking. Nice has been a big club in the past, and Marseille is, of course, one of the biggest clubs in club football. But the fact is that three of the Marseille players, Guendouzi, Payet, and Luan Perez, were actually checked by the doctor after the incidents and were actually showing signs of injury. Mm. Luan Perez, in particular, I mean, it was a pretty nasty injury on the neck. It completely went out of hand. And then obviously, the players left the pitch. There was apparently, and this is where we are entering an area where people are giving different versions of event, but Marseille decided not to go back to the field because they couldn't be assured that the safety of their players would be assured, which I think is fair enough. The Nice players came back on the pitch, and the corner kick didn't take place, but it was staged. It was a surreal scene with the Nice players waiting for a corner kick to be delivered by a Marseille player who wasn't there. Mm. And then finally everybody left the pitch, and then it's mayhem, because you would have hoped and perhaps expected that the football authorities would have taken very strong stance on that immediately, instead of what we've had. A number of people expressing their opinions on that. It's become a huge affair. I mean, it's the biggest affair on all French media at the moment when it comes to football. Everybody giving their opinion. And the people who should be taking decisions basically deciding, you know, going, I hope you're here when I'm, and you guess what I'm doing now. Doing the old Pontius Pilatus gesture, saying, well, you know, it's terrible, it shouldn't happen, all these sort of things, but, you know, let's have somebody else decide as to what's going to happen. And the latest, well, one of the latest developments is the LFP, which, interestingly enough, is is run by a former president of Olympique Marseille, Vincent Labrune, has called on the French government to intervene, nothing less, instead of, you know, taking their own decisions and applying the regulations.
Hmm. I thought they had summoned both clubs to a disciplinary commission tomorrow.
Yes, they have. Yes, they have indeed. And what will come out of it, we have absolutely no clue. Yeah. The clubs have themselves have issued statements. They've been very free of their opinions on various medias. Marseille are saying that they were never told that should they leave the pitch, they would have to forfeit the game and therefore lose the 3 points. That's what they say. It never happened. They say the referee was in favor of abandoning the game because he didn't think he was capable of basically managing a competent, controllable event. Apparently, the préfet, which is the kind of local home office authority, there's no real equivalent in Britain or in Ireland, decided that the game had to go on because otherwise it would be it would create a big problem. And in fact, the game didn't go on. It didn't create any big problem. What else? Some of the mayor of Nice has intervened, saying that Dimitri Payet was the real provocateur and was more culpable than anybody, which is, if disappointing, completely to be expected from this particular gentleman. And at the moment, nobody quite knows what's going to happen, because I think that most of us football fans reacting to that, we would have thought Marseille were absolutely right to leave the pitch. Mm. And they did the right thing, because otherwise, God knows what could have happened. And they were absolutely right not to come back. And I can't imagine for a second in which mental state the players must have been after subjected what was a genuine attack. Mm. It was, we're not talking about people, you know, throwing an empty bottle. We're talking about a proper attack, assault on players by these ultras.
Yes.
And let's hope there are some very, very strong sanctions. Nice, anyway, the word is that there will be this particular stand will have to be empty for 4 or 5 games. They probably, I mean, but the question is, are they going to be given a defeat, which I personally think they should, but that's my opinion, or is, as Marseille is saying, should the match be replayed on, you know, behind closed doors on a neutral ground? That's where we are at the moment.
Yes. I can understand the Marseille players' refusal to continue, and you can imagine how difficult it must be to try and play football with the constant feeling that maybe, just maybe, a bottle might be heading in your direction at any moment. It would be distracting to put a not too fine a point on it. Yes. Just on the incident itself, which genuinely was dangerous and you know, was in danger of really getting out of control, and there were genuine altercations, it did seem to almost calm down a touch, and the fans started heading back towards the south stand. And then a couple of moments later, the Marseille coach, Jorge Sampaoli, was visibly irate. So Marseille, again, just to keep people with us, that's Payet's team. That's the team that had the bottles thrown at them. So he seemed to be just losing the plot over on the touchline and had to almost be dragged away by several players, I think Payet included. And that seemed to reignite the situation, and fans started coming on again. What Sampaoli said about the situation, Philippe, why did he get so angry almost a couple of moments after it had seemed to calm down? Do we know what went on there?
No, we don't. We don't know about that. Many people, I mean, I might have missed it, but Sampaoli, I mean, you know his character, Sampaoli. He's a very passionate man. And it's not at all out of character for him to react in such a way. But I personally, I mean, I might have missed it, to be honest. It's very easy to miss it because everybody's been talking about it except him today. I haven't heard from him. And you can imagine the club is trying to get things, you know, let's try to sort things out at the highest level. You can't have people constantly. It's like the Nice players haven't talked. You know, it's basically up to the people who are part of the hierarchy to talk. And there are already too many people talking about it. But I honestly think that regardless of what you might think of Payet's reaction, and he will probably be sanctioned for it, and he should be sanctioned for it, because he shouldn't perhaps have reacted the way he did. But I think like 99% of the people in France are thinking, you know what? I'm not really his greatest fan, or her, you know, but if somebody threw at me a full bottle of water from the stands, from the height, that hurts. That really hurts. And it's actually genuinely dangerous. And you can understand why he reacted the way he did. And there, as I said, there have been problems between these two teams in the past. I think a game in 2016 was stopped because of some trouble. And there is obviously an element in the Nice support which needs to be taken out of this particular support and never to come back at the Allianz Arena. Will this happen? No.
Yeah. Well, come onto the fans coming onto the pitch, I presume, is a rarity. How commonplace is it for bottles and objects to be thrown at players in French football?
It's unfortunately not an unusual sight. I remember, I think it was PSG's last visit to Lyon, which also has a reputation with a part of their supporters of being quite difficult to contain. And I remember Neymar taking a corner kick and being bombarded with bottles, but they were empty. And there is a bit of a difference between the two.
Yeah.
And also the stadium, the distance between the stands and the corner flag was large enough for these all these projectiles to land out in not a dangerous zone. That was not the case at the Allianz Arena, where you're actually quite close to the pitch and it genuinely rained on the pitch itself. Mm. It's unfortunately not that unusual, but to that extent, no, I haven't seen that for a very long time.
Yeah. The incident highlighted as well, I think, an aspect which is probably applicable to most football grounds, that if enough fans decide to come onto the pitch, the security generally isn't enough to stop them. Like, football games are generally reliant on this unwritten rule or this social norm that you just don't come onto the pitch, because it was just kind of striking that suddenly, maybe a very different situation, obviously, but a little bit like Wembley with the Euro 2020 final. Suddenly, if there are enough idiots who are doing their thing and coming onto the pitch, suddenly the security people in their high-vis jackets all of a sudden go from looking pretty kind of formidable to looking pretty powerless.
Yeah, they do. And how could it be otherwise? We're talking about people who very often, they're paid a pittance for doing a job which is a very difficult one. This is not what they're trained to do. I mean, it's part of their training, but we know that very often they're not trained properly. And it's when you're confronted by these lunatics, these morons, it's quite easy to get very nervous. Indeed, you know, these are not police forces, security forces. And there were actually quite a number of it. When you see the images, you see, I think the stewards reacted as quickly and as well as they possibly could. They literally tried to form a chain linking arms to prevent the fans from doing that, but there's only so much you can do. Mm. The thing is that immediately in France, some people have been saying, we should put back fencing. I mean, when I hear that, I just lose the will to live, honestly. Mm. I mean, have they learned nothing? We should put, you know, already away fans, and these were home fans, by the way, but away fans are treated like animals in some French stadiums. The treatment is absolutely disgraceful. I feel very strongly about that.
Okay,
you know, compared to what is happening in England, for example, or in Scotland, or in Germany.
Yeah.
It's the way they're really treated like potential criminals. This doesn't encourage them to behave well.
Okay.
First thing. Second thing, I would say that if you start talking about that, this immediately repressive discourse, when in fact it is obvious we know who these people are. In fact, one of the Nice supporters, the one who actually hit Payet, has been arrested and jailed. Right. I mean, you know, he was going to be interrogated. We know who these people are. Just ban them. Do what has been done in the Championship and in England for a very long time, where nothing of the kind is happening any longer. French football has got to grow up in this particular instance. And also, unfortunately, French football, the people who are in charge in French football, have got to grow up themselves and to take some responsibility and not constantly to throw the blame on others. I'm sorry if I sound very angry, but it's because I feel desperately disappointed in what happened and the reaction to it, especially after the season started so well. French football is much better than what you saw on Sunday night, believe me.
No, you don't sound angry at all, to be fair. So You mentioned these morons, and I guess we're talking about fans who I'm commonly seen referred to here in the media over the last few days as ultras. Yeah. So this ultra culture in France, like I think we're all very familiar with ultra culture in Italian football and the influence that ultras have in Italian football. Like I remember, I think it was Marseille fans storming the training ground and having to be pleaded with. Yeah, not so long ago. Again, the ultras and their influence isn't really as much of a thing in English football. So are clubs in France a little bit beholden to the ultras? Are they important? Would players be, you know, paying some kind of lip service here and there to the ultras? Are these people indulged a touch in French football in a way that, you know, doesn't really happen in the Premier League?
It varies from club to club. For me, in some clubs, it amounts to complicity.
Yeah.
They were certainly used. I won't name clubs because I don't want you to get into trouble here, and I don't want myself to get into trouble. There's one club, certainly, which has been using the ultras for various purposes, shall we say?
Such as?
Maintaining order. Is that to be a euphemism?
Okay. Certain vigilante element.
Bit of that, yeah. Intimidation. And it goes down to actually far darker corners. That's not the rule, by the way. I'm just talking about a few clubs. And there are elements within certain clubs. Certainly PSG used to be the case. There are still some problems. It used to be far, far worse than it is now. Lyon has got a real problem. Marseille has got a different problem. It's historical there. And it's a different culture. The Marseille ultras are unlike any others. But there are pockets of those ultras in most clubs. And they see it as a kind of badge of honor to be considered outlaws, hooligans, outcasts, pariahs. And they constantly, some of the elements are actually very forward-looking, interesting people to talk to, people who want to claim football for the fans, basically. But unfortunately, there is also an element within this ultra movement which is quite different than the one we saw on Sunday with the Nice ultras. But yes, there is a degree of complicity between some clubs and some movements.
And what is it that's slightly unique about the Marseille ultras?
Because I think the Marseille football culture is totally unique in France. The groups there have been established for a very, very long time. There is, I was going to say, an intermeshing of the club and the supporters groups, not of whom are ultras, by the way, which goes back a long way, which is unhealthy in some ways, notably in the way that fans were allowed to sell tickets, for example, and were they were official sales points for the tickets. The one thing I would say is that perhaps in Marseille, there is a dimension to it which is a purely, and perhaps I'm a romantic here, perhaps because I actually love that club and love its history. I'm not a fan, but I love the club. And there is a dimension which is quite different from those elements who, honestly, for me, are quasi-criminal, which I see elsewhere.
Yeah, well, extraordinary scenes. Like I said, this was Nice's first game in front of home supporters since March 2020. Geez, back with a bang.
When you compare that, honestly, when you compare that with the images I saw from San Mamés at Athletic, which were honestly made me cry, it was so beautiful because it was a genuine communion of a team and its public coming back to the cathedral, as they call it. Mm. And I compare it to what I saw in Allianz Arena, you want to weep, honestly.
Yeah. And of course, well, that's the backdrop, and Messi, it seems, is poised to make his debut for PSG on Sunday. I hope he's not having second thoughts.
Hey, well, that's going to be interesting as well, as you can imagine. I'm not absolutely sure he's going to make his debut, but you know, if you tell me so, I'm happy to take it. And I think everybody will have a look. Oh, what kind of team is Pochettino going to put in place? Especially, I mean, because you've now got a new wind in the sails of the rumours taking Kylian Mbappe to Real Madrid. I mean, it's going to be like that until 31st of August anyway. Mm. So, yes, perhaps this, despite whatever you can think, and you probably guess what I'm thinking about it, about Lionel Messi going to Paris Saint-Germain and their recruitment and so forth, perhaps we'll be able to talk about something a little bit more pleasant if not completely pleasant about Ligue 1. I'd much rather talk about Clermont-Ferrand promoted from Ligue 2 and playing phenomenal football and playing a 3-3 last weekend, which honestly was just a thing of beauty. And there are plenty of things to be excited about for French football. Some of the teams are looking great. Whether you like them or not, PSG certainly will be a team to follow, and especially this weekend, if what you say is true. And I can imagine it's going to be the toast of French football. Perhaps we can hope that there is a resolution to this conflict very, very soon, perhaps as soon as Thursday, because it's usually on Thursday that La Ligue and the Disciplinary Committee take their decisions. So tomorrow the hearings, and perhaps Thursday we'll have a decision, perhaps even earlier. I mean, the sooner it ends, the better it would be for absolutely everyone.
Okay. Philippe Auclair, great to have you on. Thanks, Philippe.
Thank you.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power, where the football chat flows like Jack Grealish's hair.
Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.